The Ohio legislature thinks we need a new constitutional convention. We think we just need to apply the existing constitution. What do you think? Next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis, and I'm the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the Executive Director of Camp American. And normally, I'm your co-host on this program, but today, Barry Sheets, who's normally the host, is out of pocket. He has many, many duties, as we all do, but today he just could not make himself available to help make this program, so I have been left to wear the host hat. Today, we're going to be discussing something because I was scheduled to be down at the State House today testifying on a bill before the Ohio State Legislature called HJR 3, that's House Joint Resolution 3. What that bill calls for is a new constitutional convention. For some reason, our state legislators have been sold this rather strange idea that they can call for a new constitutional convention. Now they say it's not a constitutional convention, it's an amendment convention, and they're using some rather obscure portions of the language in Article 5 of the United States Constitution, and I will read that for you. Article 5 says, this is the relevant portion of Article 5, it's actually longer than this. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states or by convention in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. Why are we opposing a quote-unquote amendments convention? Well, first of all, you cannot call something called an amendments convention. It's a physical impossibility. A convention, as we have explained on numerous occasions, is the highest lawmaking body in the land, constitutionally. To understand this, you have to understand that a convention makes the laws that lawmakers are bound by oath to obey. Lawmakers in Ohio have been sold on a rather strange idea, again, that they can call a convention and they can be in complete control of a convention. In other words, that they can pass a resolution that's quote-unquote strongly worded. And what that will do is cause the convention delegates to be forced to obey these resolutions that the state passes. In fact, they're actually talking about putting criminal penalties in for delegates who don't follow the resolutions. This is all laughably absurd because anyone who understands how constitutions are built can tell you that the convention delegates are far more powerful than any legislator because they are direct representatives of the governed. So in other words, if they believe that the popular will is such that the people demand a new constitutional document, you can call a convention for the purpose of writing amendments and get a whole new constitution out of it. Now, how do we know that's true? Well, we know that's true because in 1787, a constitutional convention was called in Philadelphia, and I think you're all familiar with the outcome. The outcome was that we went from the Articles of Confederation to the current Constitution of 1787, the current United States Constitution. And before that, the Articles of Confederation were our national constitution. The resolutions calling for the Constitution are as clear as they can be. The Federal Constitutional Convention resolution called directly for amendments to the Articles of Confederation, and the purpose of the amendments was originally for the purpose of really giving an interstate commerce clause to the Articles of Confederation. It didn't have one, and also to provide a revenue stream for the Congress, because Congress didn't really have any regular revenue at that time. They did things by a method. They would issue assessments to the states, and the states were supposed to pay these assessments so that the federal government could do things like pay the Continental Army and maintain the Continental Navy. Well, the problem being that the states would, when it came time to pay assessments, would throw their hands up and say, sorry, there's no money in the coffers, we're not going to pay our assessment. So Congress always found itself on the verge of bankruptcy, paying back loans and things from the Revolutionary War, all kinds of different diplomatic problems because they couldn't pay their diplomats, and there were just any number of things. So they needed a revenue stream. Well, suddenly we find ourselves with a crisis. Is always done. You call a constitutional convention, and in fact, several attempts were made to call constitutional conventions in 1786. There was some in 1785, but there were no looming crises that caused the states to think, you know, we really need to rethink this situation. Comes along the late 1786, and we have a little thing called Shays' Rebellion in Massachusetts, and I'm not going to go into the details of that here, but let's suffice it to say it was blown into a national crisis when, in fact, it was really a kind of a little small localized revolt, not as it's portrayed in the history books. If you want to know more information on that, go to www.campamerican.com and go to the video sales, and you can buy my lecture on that. I give a two-hour lecture on the first constitutional convention. It's called Crises, Coups, and Constitutional Conventions. And you'll get a little handle on how crisis is used to gin up the idea that we should have a new constitutional convention, how it was done in 1786 and 87, and how it's being done today. The current crisis, of course, is the budget crisis. Now, the budget crisis is based on year after year, budget after budget, we're spending more and more and more and more and more money than we take in tax revenues. And of course, the answer is not to raise taxes. That is probably the silliest idea you can imagine, because all that does is create disincentive to become more productive, because the more productive you become under our current taxation system, the more money you pay, which of course is a disincentive for creating more wealth. And the less wealth you create, the less jobs there are. So much for the Economics 101, which our Congress does not seem to understand. The Ohio legislature has been sold on this idea that we can control spending through a constitutional convention, which will then propose a balanced budget amendment, which will then be ratified by all the states, because the states are sick and tired of being stuck with the costs of running the federal government by unfunded mandates and those kinds of things. What our state legislature doesn't seem to understand is that once they let the genie of a constitutional convention out of the bottle, that what's going to happen, inevitably, as sure as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, there will be people who will attempt to fundamentally alter the Constitution. There is absolutely no doubt of this. This is going to happen. If we get a constitutional convention, we're going to get a basic alteration of the document, if not a brand new document. And Barry and I have contended for years now that once a convention is called, there will be a new document. Now, what the state legislature does not understand is the fact that they believe, because in 1787 that the states appointed the delegates and were in control of their, more or less in control. And when I say control, we'll explain why not later. But they believe that because in 1787 the states appointed the delegates to the convention, that they're going to get to do so again in a new constitutional convention. Well, if you'll recall, I read to you Article 5. Nowhere in Article 5 is there any stipulation that the states are in charge of delegate selection to a new constitutional convention. Now, I will give the founding fathers this pass on their design of Article 5. Article 5 was done in a very haphazard manner. There was an attempt to actually remove Article 5. There were founders who were building this federal government, and they did not want the states to be able to take any of their own power back. In other words, the states were surrendering a certain amount of power to the federal government, and these founding fathers looked at it. They were the guys who wanted to centralize power in a federal government. They wanted to eliminate the states. And they actually proposed, when this idea came up, that they need to come up with a way to do another constitutional convention if it became necessary. They wanted to completely remove the states from the ability to seize their power back. In other words, to maintain their own state sovereignty. Those guys lost at the Constitutional Convention. The whole plan was, and these were the people that blew Shays' Rebellion up into a national crisis in order to get the states to send people to the Constitutional Convention, and in fact to get guys like George Washington to show up, because Washington did not want to be involved in a new Constitutional Convention, and he was convinced to do so through the quote-unquote national crisis of Shays' Rebellion. These guys lost in their bid to strip the states of their ability to call a new constitutional convention. But it was considered such a far idea from their minds that the states would not be in control of their own delegations. They did not believe that state sovereignty would be eroded to the point where it has been eroded these days. Right now, the original design that the centralizers wanted to do, and that is the states as mere administrative districts rather than sovereign entities on their own with their own retained powers and capabilities, the states have now become these administrative entities that the centralizers wanted to get, and no one foresaw the fact that the states would not demand to be in control of their own delegation. So it was not put into Article 5. Now, because it's not explicitly laid out in Article 5, and because of the way we now read what's called the Supremacy Clause, and that's in Article 6, and I'll read that really quickly too. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. In other words, the states supposedly can't override federal law. There are many problems with this way of thinking, and one of the problems is, of course, that Article 10 in the Bill of Rights, that's the 10th Amendment, makes it rather clear, and I'll read that as well, that the states retain a number of rights and responsibilities that they have not surrendered to the federal government. Here's Article 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. That points us back to the fact that the enumerated powers, and by the enumerated powers, I mean the powers listed in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, are the only powers available to the federal government. That means that the federal government's authority is supreme in those areas that are listed in Article 1, Section 8. It's really not that difficult a thing to understand. But the idea that somehow the federal government should now be in control of everything. In fact, the way that this supremacy clause that I read out of Article 6 is construed these days, that basically the federal government, anything that they think they can do and can get away with, and the Supreme Court says that they're allowed to do, they're allowed to do. Well, the Constitution begs to differ. And the fact is that the Ohio legislature does not grasp the fact that once they pass a call for a constitutional convention, and if 33 other states do the same thing, Congress has no choice but to call a constitutional convention. And once that genie's out of the bottle, remember, we've only done this once in our history since 1787. Now, we've had more than one constitutional convention because we have more than one constitution in our history. Our first constitution, as we mentioned before, was the Articles of Confederation, which was built by the Continental Congress, which was, in fact, a constitutional convention, as it was constituted at the time. And I can't go much into that history. If you really want to understand this a little more deeply, please contact us and take our Institute on the Constitution course. The cost is very fair. It's about $5 a week for 12 weeks. You're going to come away with an understanding of your constitutional government that's much deeper than that held by most of your state legislators, definitely most of your federal legislators, your governors, your president, and most of your Supreme Court. Now, if you want to know about this, get a hold of us at www.principledpolicy.com and send us an email from that place and ask us where our next Institute on the Constitution class is. We'll be happy to set one up for you. If you can get us 12 students, we'll build a new Institute on the Constitution course in your area. We do them in Central Ohio. We do them in Southeastern Ohio. We have friends in Western Ohio who are doing them. We can set you up with any number of these things. But the fact is, we need you right now. This is actually an emergency situation. We need you to call your state representative and tell them you oppose HJR3. That's tell them you oppose HJR3 and that you want them to vote no if that comes to the floor of the House. Right now they've got the votes. This thing has to be stopped. It is poisonous. Call your state representative and oppose HJR3. And with that, we're out of time. We ask you to join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.